Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, March 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital and its Saratoga Medical Group with more than 30 specialty practices, including sports medicine, urology, and outpatient infusion center on its Malta campus, saratogahospital.org. Joining us today is Dr. Robert Sachs. He's an ophthalmologist, retinal specialist, and director of retina services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region. He's here to answer your questions about eye care and treatment. Give us a call if you have a question. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Robert Sachs and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs. Dr. Sachs is a retinal specialist and has been director of retina services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region since 1989. He specializes in macular degeneration, retinal vein disease, and diabetic retinopathy. Dr. Sachs earned his medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry. He's board certified by the American Board of Ophthalmology and is a member of several professional societies. It's always great to have Dr. Sachs on the program. If you have a question, get it in early. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, our number, 800-348-2551. Dr. Robert Sachs, how are you, sir?
I'm well, Ray. How are you?
Great to have you back on the program. It's going to be a busy one, I have a feeling, and this is one of several early emails we got. I'll go right to it. This is from Laura, and Laura writes, I get frequent calizations in my left eyelid, and I use an electric heating pad on the eye morning and night to try and put heat on it. My understanding is that the clogged maybe, you know, every time there's a Medical Monday, there are words I can't say. Meibomian fluid needs to be about 120 degrees in order to become more viscous. Are there any other products out there that can get the eye a little bit hotter, something geared specifically toward heating up the eyelids?
Actually, there is. We have an in-office procedure we do where we can treat the eyelids and these meibomian glands, which produce the oil that's part of the natural tear film. We can soften and help the glands express themselves appropriately. Sometimes they get clogged up, they swell, it causes some localized inflammation. There's a lot of issues that go on with the eyelids. It's all part of a bigger problem with dry eye and just general irritation of the eyes. But this should be done, you know, in the proper hands. We have people in the office who do that kind of help, offer that kind of help. It's not a product that you can just buy in the store. She's trying to do something on her own. I just don't want her to burn herself or to cause any problems. But, you know, a good examination would certainly go a long way towards giving her some relief.
This one is from Barbara. Barbara says, I'm 73. Great eyesight so far. My mother and all of her three sisters, however, had severe cases of macular degeneration. I do have annual eye exams, and so far everything is normal. But I want to know, besides eating dark leafy vegetables and wearing good sunglasses, are there any preventative or protective measures I can take to avoid trouble?
Yes, there are. Macular degeneration, we consider it to be a metabolic imbalance of very sensitive tissues in the back of the eye. The green leafy vegetables contain certain components that help with oxidation protection of the back of the eye, but there are other things that we can offer too. It's kind of complicated to go into now, but we offer things with fish oil, but a special type of fish oil. The omega-3s are protective and help to mitigate light-induced or chemical-induced damage to the macular area without going into great medical detail. Again, a good examination and a discussion with your ophthalmologist should be able to point you in the right direction, but there are things that can be done that do seem to slow the process. The macular degeneration tends to be a progressive, but you can slow the process. You can slow the progression down and maintain vision better or longer with these interventions. So discuss that with your ophthalmologist. Make sure that they understand your family history, and that should be quite helpful to you.
Dr. Robert Sachs joins us today. And one more email here, then we'll get to the phones. 800-348-2551. The lines are completely jammed at this point, but if you hear somebody hang up, that would be a good time to call. This last email from David. David says, I'm looking to get a new pair of glasses that were recently prescribed to me. I'm not currently covered for a new pair of glasses, but ophthalmologist recommended I get a new pair. My prescriptions are for progressive lenses. I'm looking to find out how do I increase the range of vision with the lenses. I'm also looking for better coatings to avoid some of the fingerprint and dirt smudges that impair my vision. I'm looking to have some simple steps to help me communicate with a technician working with me to get the best possible pair. Of course, I'm willing to spend more, but that's prices are not the issue here on Medical Monday. As far as some of the other questions, what do you think, Doc?
Well, there are differences among lens types, and that should be discussed with your optician, the person who actually is going to fit you with the lenses based on the numbers, the formula that was given to them by your optometrist or ophthalmologist. And you can talk to them about these different issues. There are coatings that help to stop glare. There are coatings that help to keep them cleaner. But this needs to be discussed. And, of course, you know, those add-ons or the quality of lens may be more expensive, but you'll get a better lens out of it. As far as range of vision goes, the problem with progressive lenses is that there are different segments that meld into one another that give you distance at the top of the lens and middle distance for computer screens and lower and at the bottom of the glass would be magnification for reading or for close work. And that is balanced by the ophthalmologist or the optometrist. They give you that, those numbers, and then the optician turns that into the hardware, the glasses, based on your needs. So you describe what it is you're interested in. If you're looking for something that's more of a computer, they can weight the glasses, the focus of the glasses more towards a computer screen distance. Or if you like to do fine craft work, they can give you some more help in the reading part. But this is a discussion you should have. It sounds like you have a good grasp of what it is you're after. Just make sure they answer your questions when you go in to do that. So that's my best advice.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest today on Vox Pop Medical Monday. Let's grab a call or two before the first break. 800-348-2551. Jane in Bloomingburg. Jane, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was calling because my dad is 84 years old. He recently got his second dose of the COVID vaccine, and almost immediately he came down with a case of shingles, which he had never had before. And it migrated into behind his eye, and he's in a tremendous amount of pain. And his ophthalmologist took a look, and the ophthalmologist feels it's past the point where it'll spread into the eyeball. So we're not worried about that. But it's the tremendous amount of debilitating pain my dad is in. I'm wondering if there's any indication how long he might suffer with that.
Mm. Well, the problem with shingles is it's very unpredictable. Did he ever have the shingles vaccine?
He didn't, and that's something I didn't realize that he had refused, and he's regretting it right now.
Yeah. It runs a course, and it'll eventually, you know, tend to lessen the discomfort, but it can leave some lingering sensitivity of the nerves that are affected, and that's where the ophthalmologist comes in following that and making sure that all is well. Did they put him on any kind of antiviral medication?
Yes. Yes,
good.
He went on an antiviral immediately. So
good.
He's in good shape now, and the scabs and blisters and everything are all clearing up. It's just a pain issue right now.
Oh, it is. It is. There's a thing called herpetic or post-herpetic neuropathy where the nerves in that area become even after the scabs are gone, they're still can be very sensitive. So again, you know, stay close to your, you know, to the primary care doctor as well and the ophthalmologist. Make sure that things are okay. But yes, I'm glad he's past the point of that spreading. It usually stays in one particular nerve distribution for a while and rarely goes outside of that nerve distribution. So hopefully this is the worst he's going to have, and it'll just start to slowly get better under treatment.
Jane, thank you very much for the call. We got to take a break here. Dr. Robert Sacks is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is our number, and we will be taking a break at this moment, and we'll be right back. It's Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Robert Sacks is our guest. Dr. Sacks, this is from Norma. Norma says, I recently had an eye test using a machine that did not dilate my eyes. The eye doctor showed me the picture. There were small yellow spots toward the back of my eye and referred me to a retina specialist. The referral says, evaluate for Drusen's superior temporal mid-periphery OU. Can you explain that to me? I have no problem with my vision and wear glasses or contacts. The doctor also mentioned vitamins I may take. I do have an appointment with a specialist for late April, and that's from Norma.
All right. What they noticed was these little yellow spots, which are likely these things called drusen, which are essentially little spots of weakness in the back of the eye. Some people might consider them excess material. In other words, the back of the eye is a very rapidly metabolically active area. And the layers of the retina, there are multiple layers, nerve layers, blood vessel layers, and metabolic support layers, all sandwiched together in a very, very precise architecture. When some of these layers show signs of stress, the material that is constantly being taken out of the retina and flushed away can't be removed as quickly and tends to accumulate in these little tiny spots, which are considered these drusen. That's just a term for it. Mm-hmm. It indicates that there's some metabolic stress on the back of the eye that just needs to be monitored. It doesn't necessarily mean that your vision is bad. In fact, it's compatible with good vision, but it could indicate something that just needs to be watched so that you don't develop any further issues with, say, macular degeneration, in which case that metabolic stress becomes much more of a problem. So having that looked at, having some other more detailed tests is always a good idea, and that needs to be watched. And this is a condition that is not at all uncommon as people get older.
Dr. Robert Sacks is our guest on this Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551. Michael is in Asheville. Michael, you're on.
Okay, thank you for taking the call. A few years ago, I had a detached retina, and the timeline was I started seeing big floaters, which I always have, but they were just a lot bigger. Just a few days later, I had an eye doctor appointment, so I just figured I would wait. So that was on a Thursday. He wanted me to see an ophthalmologist, scheduled it for Monday, and then it turned out to be a detached retina, which I went for treatment with another ophthalmologist on Tuesday. So I'm wondering if that's appropriate. I've talked to different people, and there's different theories about it. So I'm just wondering if you think that that's an appropriate treatment, or should it have been sooner, or does it matter if they waited that long?
That's a difficult question to answer, but I will tell you that getting you to the appropriate retinal specialist who can treat the problem, which is a specialty in and of itself, was the critical move. And it sounds like they were able to reattach your retina and hopefully restore your vision. So that's all good. We do take the complaints of floating spots, a change in floating spots in number or in size, very seriously. And we strive to see people who call with that complaint quite quickly, because you never know. It could be just a separation of the gel from the wall of the eye causing the floaters, or it could be from a retinal detachment. So we have to sort that out by examining the eye. So, quick identification is important, but then getting that, getting you to the right person is critical, so that they could then do what needed to be done either in the office or in the operating room to reattach your retina. So that's all I can really say under the circumstances.
Michael, thank you very much for the call. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Robert Sacks joins us, and Jim is in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
What other conditions other than cataracts would produce cloudy eye syndrome? And is there anything else on the horizon other than lens replacement for cataracts?
Well, cataracts are probably the most common cause of blurred vision that develops gradually over time. It's when the lens in the eye, which is a disc of protein, goes from being clear, like a perfectly clean piece of glass, to a state where it is cloudy and darker. Think of dark and dirty sunglasses. And that usually develops over a period of time, so it's not an overnight thing. But that's the main reason for people to develop blurry vision over time. There are other things that can cause vision to be blurred, anywhere from damage or breakdown of the cornea, the front surface of the eye, which needs to be crystal clear in order to see well, through the lens, which we talked about as a cataract, through to the back of the eye, which is a very critical part of the visual system. And if there's damage to the central part of the retina called the macula, from macular degeneration or from diabetes or from any of a number of retinal problems with blood flow, that could all cause blurry vision and needs to be sorted out. If it is a cataract, then cataract surgery is a very elegant procedure. And what I'd like to tell you is that the procedure itself is very quick. We do it in a special facility in Latham. It takes about less than 8 minutes to do a procedure in one eye. The procedure is done that quickly. It is painless. And it is permanent, meaning that once the cataract is removed and the implant lens replaced, it's designed to be there forever. It doesn't have to be redone in any number of years. It's done, one and done. So, you know, consider that if you have a cataract in development and it's starting to affect your vision, do not be afraid of cataract surgery. As I said, it's quick, painless, and permanent.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Now, cataracts in general, do they develop in both eyes at about the same pace, or is there a difference sometimes of years between the two?
Usually they do develop equally because the two eyes are about the same age and under the same metabolic stress. But things like trauma to one eye or the other can accelerate the development of cataracts. And sometimes there is a difference in the way that the cataracts do develop. We see that not uncommonly. But the usual course of events is the cataracts in both eyes are close to equivalent. And so we usually plan on doing cataract surgery in one eye and then the other just a couple of weeks apart to keep the person in with their best vision possible, but also in balance.
Ah. Go ahead. That was it.
That was it.
Okay. You know, short and to the point, Dr. Robert Sachs, always great to have you on the show. And let's go to Hannah in Hillsdale. Hannah, you're on.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
I also have age-related macular degeneration. Hello, do you hear me?
Hello.
Yes, ma'am,
hello.
We do.
Hi.
Yes.
Oh, you too. I have a age-related macular degeneration. I also had cataract surgery. I have drusen that is getting worse and worse, I think. I mean, and I had a Bain occlusion in my right eye years ago. So that's my history.
Okay.
My question is, over-the-counter medications like Arids and the cysteine eye drops, what do you think about them as a, what do you think about over-the-counter vitamins like the Arids?
Well, the Arid study was done 20 plus years ago, and the formula, the information about metabolic support for the macula has advanced since that time. There are things that we prescribe, depending on the examination, on the individual, that are more potent and have other ingredients in them, other nutritional support ingredients, all of which are designed to, as I say, support the rapid metabolic state of the back of the eye and try to prevent it from showing signs of further deterioration. As we discussed about drusen earlier, they are an indication of metabolic stress on the back of the eye for the most part. You have the macular degeneration. You've had a vein occlusion, which means you had a blocked blood vessel in the back of the eye, and that can, in and of itself, quickly cause damage. Even over the long term, the damage may not fully recover. You've had cataract surgery, which is good. That means that the light gets to the back of the eye. The question is, when the light gets there, how well is it interpreted? That has to do with the health of the macula, and we do have things that we can offer. Monitoring we can provide that seems to be better and probably more effective than some of the over-the-counter supplements.
Okay. Well, Hannah, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest on Medical Monday, and Curtis is in Dolgeville. Curtis, you're on.
Hi, yes. I had cataract surgery more than a year ago in January and February of a year ago. Everything seemed to be fine, going well for a while. Now my eyes started getting very blurry. The doctor gave me something called Refresh, which I use. However, one eye is starting to clear up. Another eye is not. My right eye is not clear at all. My left eye is somewhat clear. I get up in the morning, my eyes are blurry, I put on my glasses, I can watch TV. After about a half an hour to 45 minutes, I have to take my glasses off because my eyes have finally cleared up. But during the day, it's like on and off. They clear up, I can see clear to a certain extent, then they're blurry again. I'm wondering, is that ever going to clear up?
Well, there are things we can do. What that sounds like is a very, very common situation, which is a part of what we call dry eye disease of the eye. So the eye produces tears all the time. It makes a small amount of a type of tear that coats and smooths the surface of the eye. When the tears are in adequate quantity and of adequate quality, and I'll get back to that in a moment, The surface of the eye is smooth, it's comfortable, you don't feel your eyes, you don't feel like there's something in there, they don't feel burny or itchy, and vision is good because the surface is very, very smooth and crystal clear. The problem is that as people get older, they produce fewer tears. And sometimes the eye tries to make up for that by turning on the tear gland that hides up under your eyebrow, under that bone, but those tears are designed to rinse the eye. They flush off the surface of the eye, but they don't stick around, which means that they feel temporarily better, but they don't give you any long-term benefit, which is because the basal tears, the ones that are made, should be made in more quantity, are not being made adequately. So we have things that we can do to support the development of the tears, the proper type of tears. We can test you for tear quality and quantity and then try to set you up in a way that gives you much more comfort and better vision. So you wake up in the morning, your eyes have been a little desiccated, a little dried overnight, not unusual. You put some drops in, and you're starting the process of smoothing out the surface of the eye, but that might take a while. You're noticing that. So you're not getting that crisp vision right away, which is really what you want. You want to get up and start seeing well and not have to feel your eyes all day. So there are things that can be done, but a good examination by an ophthalmologist can help determine if you have a dry eye condition, which it sounds like, and what components of the tears are inadequate and how we can help that get better.
Curtis, thank you very much for the call. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Robert Sachs joins us today. And Bob is in Valencia. Bob, hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
You bet. Go ahead.
Dr. Sachs, answer a question about AION.
Right.
Can you? Okay.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Optical neuropathy. Some years ago, I got this condition, which resulted in a blank spot in the middle of my vision of my left eye.
Yes.
At the time, I consulted a couple of ophthalmologists. I was told that very little was known about this condition, but it was judged that a change, even a normal change in blood pressure, can kick this condition off, which results in the optic nerve getting damaged. And a risk factor is the so-called small cups, which some of us have in the back of our eye where the nerves come into the eye.
Right.
So two questions. I'm taking a baby aspirin every day. That was one thing recommended. I was advised against advised to be very careful of certain drugs. For instance, things like Viagra or other things might cause a change in blood pressure as being dangerous, perhaps kicking off the condition in the other eye. My second concern is if patients have these so-called small cups, then why don't ophthalmologists recommend you take a baby aspirin just as a preventive measure for that risk factor?
All right. Well, we got a few things to unpack here.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about is a condition called AION, which means anterior ischemic optic neuropathy. It means at the front of the optic nerve, there has been a blood vessel or a blood flow lack. That's the ischemic part. And optic neuropathy is damage to the optic nerve. And oftentimes we don't know why this happens. There are some structural correlations in the eye, and small cups, that's when the optic nerve is a little compressed. The optic nerve contains the blood vessels that feed and drain the retinal surface, and in cases where there's a very small opening for those blood vessels to go through, some structural change within the optic nerve can cause a change in blood flow, and that can lead to this problem. Sometimes it has to do with blood flow. The reason they put you on baby aspirin is aspirin is an antiplatelet drug. It prevents little clots within the bloodstream, and they thought that might have contributed to it. Sometimes and oftentimes, we don't know why these things happen. Initially, when you present with something like this, we get some blood tests to see if there are problems with blood flow or with clotting. You know, some people have what they call a hypercoagulable state. They just have blood that will clot spontaneously within their own blood vessels, and that's something that can be recognized and treated with aspirin or some other medication. But the aspirin is not a bad thing to get started with. Things like Viagra, which affect blood flow, can have that effect if in a compromised eye. So in other words, if the blood flow is already a little bit less than it should be, something like Viagra can do that. Another thing that can do it is blood pressure medicines. We don't recommend that people take their blood pressure medicines before they go to bed necessarily, because at night your blood pressure drops anyway, and then the blood vessels will, or the blood pressure can go down even more when you have the medication taken at night. And some people, we advise them to take their blood pressure medicine in the morning so they don't have this problem at night. Oftentimes, these AON episodes occur at night. You wake up in the morning and your vision is now affected because the optic nerve, that cable of a million individual nerve fibers that carries the information to and from the brain, that's the highway that carries all the information from the eye to the brain and from the brain back to the eye, that was damaged, and you lost the ability to see in a certain area of your visual field because the nerve was damaged at that spot. Again, these things happen spontaneously. We don't know why they happen. We have initial workups for them, and sometimes we can discern a cause. Oftentimes, we don't. And so then we just have to monitor and do things like the aspirin to try to maintain the maximal blood flow possible from the to the eye.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest. We have to take a break here in a minute, but just quickly, you had mentioned information going from the eye to the brain, which I get. What information goes back from the brain to the eye?
Well, certainly most of the data goes one way, but there are some feedback loops and some information that that regulates things like pupillary size light. The ability to discern different things. Certain data does travel back and forth, but most of it, you're absolutely right, is the information from the eye to the brain. But like I say, there is some feedback.
Very interesting. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest. The lines remain loaded. We'll get a couple of emails in and then hit the phones for the home stretch. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Dr. Robert Sachs joins us today, and two emails here. There's a stack of emails, but we really don't have time to get through everybody. This one's from Mark. Mark writes, I've been told that styes and chalazia are not the same thing. Chalazia seems to be much more problematic and therefore difficult to deal with. Can you please explain why some people get them and others not? Also, what can we do to prevent them? And that's from Mark.
Okay, they both involve some of the oil-producing glands around the eyelid. Those little glands sit around the eyelashes or sit in a row behind the eyelashes, and we'd like to keep them free of debris. But there's naturally dust in the air that accumulates on the edges of the eyelid. People who use makeup, some of that makeup lands and gets into those little openings. And what it does is it prevents the natural flow of the oil out of the gland, and the gland becomes blocked. Mm. And the oil continues to be made under the surface of the skin, and you get a little bump. Sometimes you get inflammation if that lasts long enough, and the area becomes red and tender. And that's a chalazion when you get that kind of an inflammatory response. You want to, if you're in a high dust environment, if you're someone who uses makeup around the eyes, it's great to get the eye makeup off and to cleanse the lid margins at least once, if not twice a day. And an easy way to do that is with dilute baby shampoo. You can get something like Johnson's No More Tears or Aveeno baby shampoo. What's nice about baby shampoo is it won't sting your eyes. And you make a half-strength solution in water and put a little bit of that on a clean, damp washcloth. Don't use a cotton ball because cotton balls tend to shed those little cotton fibers, which can be problematic themselves. But on a well-used washcloth, you're not going to get much lint. Put a little bit of that dilute baby shampoo, lather it up with your fingers, and gently massage your eyes with them just gently closed. Don't clamp them shut, but gently closed. Some of those suds will get actually onto the surface of the eyeball, but again, no more tears, won't sting, but they will lift off a lot of that dust, dirt, dead skin cells, dried oil that's naturally there, and cleanses that area and lets the glands work better. The oil produced will then flow more easily onto the surface of the eye where it's supposed to be, and it'll keep those glands open so that they don't get plugged up and form styes or chalazia.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest. One more email here, and then we'll try to get to a couple at the end of the show if there's time. This one's from Shelley. And Shelley writes, my husband accidentally elbowed me in the eye a few days ago. At the time of the impact, I saw a lightning-type flash. About 16 hours later, I began to see white flashes and floaters frequently. Now, 3 days later, the flashes / floaters have mostly subsided. Do you think I should still follow up with my optometrist? I'm not due to see him until next year. That's from Shelley.
Well, it sounds like you had some kind of a blunt trauma to the eye, and it causes the eye, even though the eye is well protected by the bones around it, the eye itself is pretty delicate. And so you compress the eyeball, and that causes fluid fluctuations in the eye that can cause the flashes. But we concern ourselves with flashes and floaters because it might have dislodged some of the vitreous gel from its natural position inside the eye. Those are things that we do take seriously. And, if you've had floaters that are new after that episode, if the flashes continued, after the immediate period, it's wise to get a good medical eye examination from an ophthalmologist, someone who can examine the peripheral retina, the outer edges of the retina where the stress tends to be the most, and make sure that you didn't damage the wall of the eye, cause a tear that could lead to a retinal detachment. I'm not saying that's what's happened, but it's always great to have that checked to verify that that's not a problem.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest, and back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Joe is in Warwick. Joe, you're on.
Hi. I had cataract surgery in my 20s. I was too young for an implant. I wore gas permeable lenses for 30 years. I finally took the plunge and had a secondary implant put in my right eye 5 years ago. And to be honest, if I could do it over again, I wouldn't have I wouldn't do it because I lost a bunch of stuff. What I'm wondering about is the eye itself doesn't seem like it's working as well as it did before. So it looks a little dead to me in photographs, and it tends to wander a bit. And I go to the ophthalmologist every 3 months for various things. And I'm not getting clear answers. So I wondered if for the wandering eyepiece, if I could do exercises. One optometrist says it would probably not make a difference. The other piece is my lid, and I know lids can lower from surgery. It's making my field of vision less. Like when I look up, I can't see the ceiling anymore. And I've heard you mention this. I wasn't going to ask, but I'll just throw it in there for good measure. I see floaters, like it looks like I'm looking through a microscope at blood cells. And I was told it could be parts of the vitreous coming through. Like I've seen a retinologist, and so that's all been checked out. So basically the two things, it's actually an astigmatism form that the hard lens might have masked, they told me. So I had an okay outcome, but I think I was doing better with the lens.
I mean, is there a specific question here, Joe?
Yeah, I know, right? They're all connected, actually.
Yeah.
So basically, for a wandering eye, like I noticed in photographs, my one eye tends to, and I noticed when I'm reading that if I cover my one eye, it's not working. And they did try putting a prism in my glasses, and it helped a little bit, but it's sort of on the border of it making a difference. So I have contemplated having it removed and going back to wearing a gas permeable lens. But the surgery itself, I was told that in the healing, it created an astigmatism, which is, part of the reason.
That can be the case, and that can be fixed. But the problem sounds like it's more than just the implant itself. Like there was some weakness to the eye that allowed it to develop a cataract early on, and the response to surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cataract came along as a result of uveitis and using Pred Forte for years.
Okay, so uveitis is inflammation within the eye, and whatever the reason of that was, that can cause damage within the eye, and then you use steroids to suppress the inflammation. But the possible effect of long-term steroid use can be the development of cataracts at an early stage. So that kind of explains that. But it sounds like you're seeing an ophthalmologist, so you're getting you just have to make sure you get your questions answered. But it sounds like that eye has had some developmental damage over the course of years. I'm not sure it's totally related to the presence of a secondary implant. So I wouldn't jump to having that removed necessarily, but make sure that the other questions are answered. If the eye is weak and the brain is not looking through it as readily as it looks through the other eye, the eye can tend to turn over time, move off axis, and that may be an issue that needs to be. Go ahead.
Exercises, and I've been getting different answers from different people.
Okay.
So that's why I'm confused. Yeah, I've had, because somebody fired. I've seen about three different ophthalmologists, a retinologist, and just wondering if there's something, if I should patch the better eye and let the other one.
Patching at this age probably isn't going to work, and you're not going to like it because you're going to be forcing yourself to look through a weaker eye, and you won't be able to drive with that, obviously, or read well. And the problem, that's one of the issues about adults patching. It sounds like you just need to get the right answers and make sure that the people that you see are addressing the issues that you have. Not having examined you, I can't really do much more except to tell you that you really need to get your questions answered so you can, your mind will be put at ease. Even if it's not with much of improvement in vision, at least you'll know why and what can be done and what the future holds.
Thanks, Joe, for the call. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest. Elaine is in Lenox. Elaine?
Hi, can you hear me?
You bet. Go ahead.
Great. So I have three sort of short questions.
Okay. On
reading, with reading glasses, computer use, and color of sunglasses. So I'm 57, have brown eyes,
and I started needing reading glasses, so I just buy the drugstore kind. I'm trying to use the least, you know, the ones that are not very strong. And I noticed that I could read with natural daylight. So I try to do that as much as possible, though it's a little slower. And, you know, some print is easier than others. And I do have reading glasses in case of emergency for like higher, like 2.5 for like bottles of vitamins and stuff. Is that good for my eyes to be practicing to read? Because some LED lights and in the evening, I have a hard time reading. I can't read without my 1.5 reading glasses, 150 or whatever.
The issue about reading glasses is this. As we get older, the lens in the eye that is becoming a cataract, before it becomes cloudy to the point where you notice it, it becomes stiffer, and it can't be flexed as easily by the little muscles in the eye that normally flex it to give you different points of focus. In other words, when you look far away versus when you look up close at something to read, the eye the muscles within the eye have to flex that lens, and it becomes harder to do so. That's why people find that they need reading glasses, something that takes away the need for them to have to flex that muscle as much. So in the daytime, when the lights are bright and the contrast between the letters, say the dark letters and the white background, is highest during the day when your eyes are also more rested, you can probably do some reading. In the evening, you know, the light is dimmer, the contrast is less, and your eyes are tired from having worked through the day, and you need more reading glass. Using reading glasses, to a certain extent, really doesn't make things worse. It just mitigates the problems, which are that you can't focus as well as you'd like to. And everybody over the age of, you know, 40, 45 starts to need some reading glass help. So a good ophthalmologist, a good exam, will tell you what power you should use, but don't be afraid to use it. Using it is not going to make things worse.
All right, Elaine.
It's just going to take away the stress on the eye so that you can read more easily.
Thank you very much for the call. Mandy is in Albany. Mandy, you're on with Dr. Robert Sachs.
Hi. Quick question. My mother, she's in her 70s, and she had cataract surgery last year. And before the surgery, she had just very minor nearsightedness. But after the surgery, now she needs like reading glasses to see like anything, like within a few feet of her, even just to eat or cook or do laundry, anything. Is there anything that can be fixed with this, or is she kind of stuck?
When we do cataract surgery, most people like to have their distance glasses eliminated. So we calculate the implant lens and devise it and have it manufactured based on a zeroing out of your distance correction. That does, however, require that you use reading glasses up close. So when she was mildly nearsighted, she could do some things up close, but her distance was somewhat limited. So a discussion must have been had at the time of the surgery, and it was decided to zero her out for distance so she would see well at distance, but it would require her to use reading glasses. Not at all unusual, and what most people end up with. The issue is then she needs to use reading glasses for more things, but that would have developed anyway, so there's really not much to do. At the time of the surgery, we do have, you know, in some people, we offer lenses that allow distance and reading vision in the same implant lens. That's a whole other discussion,
okay,
but we can do that. But at this point, with her done, I think probably the best thing to do is just make sure she has plenty of pairs of reading glasses around so she can put them on when she needs them.
All right. And now, quickly, we only have 2 minutes here. Paul in Hyde Park. Paul, you're on with Dr. Robert Sachs.
Hi, Dr. Sachs. Thanks. About a decade ago, I was diagnosed with central serous retinopathy, which it resolved itself in about 2.5 months. Does that make me, as I get older, more prone to macular degeneration or any other problems?
Well, it is a weakness of some of those metabolic support layers that we talked about earlier, and so there is some feeling that can lead to, or at least be a little more susceptible to macular degeneration. So anyone who's had central serous, even if it's resolved, usually leaves a little bit of scarring in the back of the eye that we can detect on testing, and just needs to be followed on a regular basis to make sure it doesn't advance into anything more.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate the call here. And let's see, we'll go quickly to an email from, it's too long to read. Let's see if I can find one here that I have time for. All right, we have 1 minute. This is from Nancy. I'm 62. I've had night blindness for decades. It's now so bad I stopped driving after dark. I am simply blinded by headlights, town lights, etc. Very little definition. My mother and her siblings had macular degeneration. Mom had shots weekly for both wet and dry. Both siblings went blind. Is my night blindness related to this disease?
Well, it could be, and that needs to be examined, but even more so, it might be just the development of cataracts, which cuts the light and causes glare. Your initial description just sounds very much like could be a cataract issue that might be solved with a very straightforward and very elegant surgery. But a full examination would tell you what exactly is happening in all the parts of the eye, and so that you can get an idea of the whole picture.
All right, we only have 15 seconds, but this guy's got watery eyes. Fred, you got 10 seconds. Go ahead.
Hi. My eyes have watered for years. I have to keep drying them.
Yeah.
So that's part of that dry eye syndrome I talked about, where your eyes overproduce tears in an attempt to make up what they're not making normally. You start off with artificial tears. Don't be afraid to use them. 5, 6, 7 times a day is not a problem, but get a good eye exam from an ophthalmologist. They can help you figure out what can be done to make your eyelids and your tearing system work better for you.
Oh, my gosh. Robert Sachs, you are a genius, and well done, sir. You've done this before. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ray.
We'll talk to you soon. Support comes from Berkshire Orthopedic Associates, an affiliate of Berkshire Health Systems, providing orthopedic services in the Berkshires, including Mako robotic surgery, sports medicine, and anterior hip surgery. 413-499-6600. Once again, thanks to Dr. Robert Sachs for being here today. Thank you for calling. Great calls today. Great emails. Appreciate them all. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. And our phone's answered by Joe Makowicz. Now, listen. Tomorrow's show is a secret because I don't know what it is, but somebody presumably knows what it is, and it presumably will be darned interesting or possibly interesting. Why don't you tune in at 2 p.m. tomorrow, and we'll both find out together. In the meantime, stand by for the Media Project.